Thanks very much. Yeah, my name is Andrew Chalisa. I am now a PhD student up at Boston University, but I'm going to tell you today about work that I did with Dr. Rachel Cook, she's in the audience here today, and Sylvia Secchi at Southern Illinois University. We were looking at long-term tillage by fertility corn and corn-soy trials that have been going on here in Southern Illinois, and looking at an economic cost-benefit workup that we did on it. So to introduce the site, it's out near Belleville, Illinois. That's not too far from St. Louis, so that's real far south Illinois, kind of the southern edge of the Corn Belt. It's a little unusual in no-till studies in particular, because most of those are kind of up in Ohio and Minnesota, so it's a kind of a different environment. We're calling them the Kapusta plots because George Kapusta was our venerable agricultural researcher out there for a long time. He started them as part of his PhD work back in the 70s, and what you're looking at there is Google Earth imagery of these sites that go way back, so you can see it on Google Earth still. The site is basically a flat, somewhat poorly drained Bethalto silt loam with fine texture, kind of lush soils, and 2% organic matter. What's great about this site for an economic analysis is that the activities out there, the management, is really consistent and very well documented all the way back to 1970. And we've got two different rotation systems that we can analyze and sort of compare side by side as well. We had a continuous corn system from 1970 to 1990, and then we switched to a corn soybean in 1991 till it's still running today. We had, I won't go into great detail on this, but it was basically orthogonal combinations of tillage and fertilizer. You had five fertilizer regimes, a control, a totally unfertilized, an in-only, and then different flavors of NPK. And four different tillage intensities, one of which was a no-till. So we have plots out there that have been under continuous no-till now for 44 consecutive years. So this is a pretty interesting environment, and these are hard places to find. Now, the current kind of economic study we were interested in was, in the region at least, no-till has been adopted for kind of soil conservation purposes, and that a lot of times applies on sloping land, which makes a lot of sense because it really does knock down soil losses. But we're kind of curious, too, as to what are the actual comparative economics on no-till systems versus other sort of traditional tillage systems, and in particular in this sort of environment that no-till isn't very often applied to because soil conservation is less of a concern on flat sites like this. Now, the way that we did this was we kind of reconstructed the different management activities that went into and the different inputs that went into each of these different treatment combinations over the course of their 44-year lifetimes. So we were looking at not only the outcome of yield, but what management efforts went into each treatment type and what sort of inputs went in. So to give you an example, those graphs you're looking at the bottom of the one on the left is a price history of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium for one of the plots over the course of the last 44 years. The one on the right is just the price of soybeans and the price of corn as a commodity on the market for the last 44 years. And I will note that all of these have been updated. I'll tell you this in a minute. But all of these are put into 2013 dollars, so that gives you a sort of sense of the real value of these things. Now, what we did was take basically the small experimental plot level, and we track the inputs and management activities and the yield outputs in each one of those things and extrapolate it on a per acre basis for how much is it worth per acre and how much does it cost you to get that per acre. And that sort of makes the assumption that each plot is a tiny piece of a much larger farm operation. We also looked at profit as a relative sense because we knew we wouldn't be able to model absolutely every cost that would go into producing these commodities on this level. So, for instance, like we didn't really know what seed price would be, and we know that's probably a pretty significant chunk. So we measured all profits relative to an arbitrary baseline. So we picked one of our treatments, the chisel till and NPK broadcast, as just a benchmark, and then we measured everything on a year-by-year basis against that mean. And that kind of squeezes out some of the variability that would otherwise you're not modeling because you don't know. We, in general, were using price and index data from the USDA NASS whenever possible, and we had to get creative in a few instances on other things when that wasn't possible. So again, what we tracked was the yield of the different commodities that we were producing. We looked at fertilizer type and what was being put in, so UAN versus ammonium nitrate, depending on what was happening year by year. We looked at machinery practices, so what tillage passes were being used, what kind of equipment was being used, as well as what kind of labor and fuel consumption that implies. We looked at herbicide use and the rate, and depending on what kind of herbicide was going on out there, and as well in lime applications. And again, like I said, we adjusted all of our profit figures to 2013 dollars to sort of give a sense, a fair sense. Using the USDA's PPITW index, that is kind of like the consumer price index, but as it more appropriately applies to farming families. It tracks the sort of things that farming families have to buy and that sort of thing. Now, our results here are kind of in many ways follow what we've found, and Rachel Cook will tell you about this tomorrow, with yield out there. So this is the average annual profit relative to NPK chisel. And what it shows is in continuous corn, there's a major profit penalty for not fertilizing at all. That's hardly surprising. There was a huge yield penalty as well. But if you look at all of the other treatments, they all sort of fall pretty close to, in terms of profitability, to the benchmark. The one sort of exception was the no-till in-only, and that is in large part due to the fact that the yield on no-till in-only is quite low. Moving ahead, though, when you switch to corn-soybean, the yield penalty for going no fertilizer at all is not nearly as high, and we think that's probably because the soybeans are introducing nitrogen into that system that hadn't had it for 20 years at that point. So that had the penalty for not doing any fertilizer is not quite as high. But on the other hand, the in-only plots start to do comparatively much worse, and we think that has a lot to do with the soybean yield in the in-only started to look really bad. And at this point, you're looking at 20-plus years of no P&K applications on those sites. P&K limitation is starting to be pretty severe, and that really shows up in the soybean yields. And so that starts to pull down your profits as well. But again, as before, once you get into the fully fertilized plots, the NPK plots, tillage is a non-issue. Profitability is all within the statistical range of error. If you want to run this on a year-by-year basis, I won't go into this too much, but if you just tally it up year-by-year, you can see in the continuous corn, the failure to fertilize, of course, is these mounting losses, whereas everything else tools along about comparably over time, except for that one kind of outlier of the no-till in-only. Whereas when you switch to corn-soybean, the penalties aren't nearly as bad. Now, so to sort of sum this up, when you're using NPK in corn, in continuous corn, the NPK applied were all similar to benchmark. It didn't matter what your tillage was. In general, the model, the statistical model predicted kind of a slight drag just with no-till in general, but again, that drag doesn't appear as a significant factor in the NPK plots. Your controls and in-onlys were significantly lower because you're missing yield compared to the NPKs, and your in-only no-till was significantly lower than the benchmark because yield was so much lower. Whereas when you switch to corn-soybean, all of your, again, it's just like the same, your NPK applied is similar to your benchmark in terms of profitability, tillage is a non-issue. Your controls and in-onlys are significantly lower, again, because P&K limitation is dragging your soybean yield down in particular, but also your corn yield. At that point, your no-till in-onlys are starting to look similar to control. We were seeing some evidence of some pretty serious yield problems there. But your overall losses in your controls and your in-onlys are not quite as bad because the soybeans are introducing some free nitrogen for your corn to take up the next season. One of the other things we can do with this data set is because we have control treatments and in-only treatments that differ only in whether or not fertilizer gets put down, nitrogen gets put down, we can look at the difference in profit and compare that to the amount of money that was spent on nitrogen in those systems to get a return on investment for nitrogen. And by the same logic, we can do the same thing with the in-onlys versus the other NPK-applied controls and see what was the return on investment, what is the extra profit you get versus the money you spend on P&K. And you get some really interesting differences in the two different rotation systems when you look at that. In the continuous corn, your return on nitrogen is very high because the penalty for corn yield is so high when you refuse to put nitrogen down, right? Whereas the return for P&K is somewhat lower. Whereas when you switch to corn and soybean, the return on nitrogen is not as high anymore because, again, the soybeans are cushioning the blow a little bit because of the nitrogen they provide. But on the other hand, the returns on P&K are much higher, and the returns on P&K are really high in no-till because the no-till suffers so badly when you don't use P&K. It is worth noting, too, though, that return on fertilizer on all of these is positive and in the range of hundreds of percentages. So it always made sense to spend money on fertilizer. A dollar spent on fertilizer always came back to you on some level. The other thing we can look at is trade-offs in seedbed prep costs. So, there's amounts of money that are spent on different activities to prepare the seedbeds prior to planting in each one of these. And in no-till, it's herbicide to knock down the weeds, and in the tillage systems, it's tillage to knock down the weeds. And so you can look at, what are the trade-offs and what happens if the prices of those two different means of doing things change. So, you can see in no-till, the cost of seedbed prep is really dominated by herbicide costs, whereas in, a moldboard plow, it's dominated by the cost of running machinery. So we said, let's do a sensitivity analysis on those costs to see, A, if our estimates are robust to what if we got our prices wrong, or B, what can we expect to happen in the future. So if you vary the historic herbicide cost by up to 50%, you don't get a change in results. So the results are robust to our herbicide cost estimate, right? So even if herbicide goes up quite a lot, no-till will still be competitive in those NPK systems. On the other hand, if you vary the machinery cost by up to 50%, in corn soybean, no-till NPK broadcast starts to significantly outpace its competitors. And a lot of that has to do with, and Rachel may tell you about this, is that the no-till soybeans in NPK were looking really good. The yield on those was quite high. And so you're saving money compared to tillage systems because machinery gets more expensive, basically. We still have a lot of work to do on this sensitivity analysis, but that's just the sort of stuff we're going to be looking at. So to conclude, the title of this presentation is Fertilizer is Essential. And fertilizer is essential for maximum profits. Maximum profits were only ever realized when a full NPK fertility management was happening. On the other hand, seedbed prep is in many senses recreational. It just sort of boils down to how do you want to get it done. If you like spraying, go ahead and spray. If you like tilling, go ahead and till. But neither of them caused a significant difference in profitability over time. It was not even tillage, seedbed prep costs were not even a very large category of overhead when it was all said and done. Really, what you were spending a lot of money on would have been your fertilizer and probably your seedbed prep if we modeled that too. It is worth noting, and this is a big result in this long-term study, is that no-till with NPK is profit competitive over the long term in both the continuous corn and in the corn soybean systems. That's a big finding. And that's true, but if you don't use NP and K on your no-tills, that's not true. No-till won't keep up without that. So that's our findings. A big thank you has to go out to our friend Ron Krauss out there at BRC, the research farm manager. He has been patiently managing this farm and this experiment for the last couple of decades, and he's the reason why we have the data today. And this is our contact. That's me and Dr. Rachel Cook. If you want to show up tomorrow at 8 a.m. bright and early, Rachel will be giving the yield and soil results from this experiment in 103, and it's a very interesting read. So thank you.
Thank you.
Questions from the group? Okay, so in 44 years, you never incorporated
No, never. No, and that was a little surprising too, and so we started looking back in the literature, and there were, early in the days of no-till, there was that concern, is how is P and K going to get into the roots if you're never incorporating it? But there's been a number of studies that have shown, even back in the 70s, that surface application of P and K seems to work just fine. We're finding that it does tend to concentrate very highly in the surface few centimeters of soil, but the corn and the beans don't seem to care. They just go get it where it is. So.
One more question.
Were the rates of fertilizer costs based off the soil samples?
I'm not entirely sure where the initial rates came from, and they were adjusted a few times over the course of the experiment. Were they based on Illinois recommendations, I think, for our local soil type and parent material and that sort of stuff. But they were not routinely adjusted for soil tests or anything like that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's thank our speaker.